Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
All right, everyone, welcome to Monday. The good news is it's not snowing. The bad news is it might tonight. It's April 2nd. Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Monday afternoon. Have you ever tried to boycott Facebook or Twitter, Snapchat, things like that? A lot of people talk about that, but it's a little harder to do than you might think. We will kick that around in the second half hour. We start our Mondays with the folks from Chicago Inno. Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis are in the studio. Welcome to both of you.
Hi, Steve.
What's up, Steve?
Nice weekend, I trust.
Oh, yeah. Well, a little chilly, but not too bad.
You're right. It was chilly. Loyola lost. The Cubs got shut out yesterday. Okay, let's forget the weekend. Let's start the week. Jim, you wrote a story that's about Vanity Fair doing a story focusing on women who have raised, women of color, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who have raised more than $1 million of outside money for their tech companies. There aren't too many of them.
That's right. Yeah. The numbers are pretty staggering, actually. 26 women of color have raised more
in
than
the country.
In the country, in the U.S., have raised more than $1 million in outside capital for their tech startups, which is insane. You know, you look at all these venture funds that are pumping billions and billions and billions of dollars into U.S. startups. Women of color are getting virtually none of that money.
And you introduce us to the story through Star Cunningham, who is one of the 26. Who is Star, Catherine?
Yeah, she's the founder of local healthcare technology startup 4D Healthware. And what they do is they create a software that works with like wearable devices, like an Apple Watch, a Fitbit, to help patients and doctors monitor health conditions when they're not, you know, face-to-face with their doctors.
We talk about that a lot. In fact, there's an app that where you can video or shoot yourself, record yourself taking your medicine and things like that. So this is another way for doctors to keep track.
Yep, and they've raised $2.2 million to date.
She has an interesting theory that, again, I've heard before about why there are so few women of color or people of color getting this outside capital, and it has to do with the friends and family round. Explain that to me.
So a very important piece of, you know, the venture capital landscape is raising money before you even approach VCs. So most startups are able to raise money by getting a $25,000 check, a $50,000 check from a neighbor, a family friend, somebody within their network, beyond going to like the venture capital level.
Right.
A lot of women of color don't have that kind of network built in. So a lot of them are, you know, like Star, for example, she worked at IBM. She had a career, great six-figure job. So she's, you know, has to start by funding her own business, right? And then reach out to some angel investors from there. So women of color often have a harder time getting those $25,000 checks before they can jump into the room with the VC.
And she argues, though, that it might then be a better investment because they've been tested.
Well, the ideas have to be better, right? So when they're going into pitch VCs, they've been in their product has been in the market longer, and it's been tested. It's been in front of customers. This isn't just a back of the napkin idea, right? This is something that has been tested and tried and true.
All right. One of the things you guys, when I'm introduced to companies that you guys write about, or you people, you friends, I'm not sure. But it's about companies that are raising money outside capital. And that's the case with this story about ShipBob. The story, I guess, is the money they've picked in. But, man, I like their origin story. Tell me about ShipBob.
Yeah. So, you know, over the last 4 years, they've really become like one of Chicago's hottest logistics startups. And, you know, they've raised more than $22 million. And they just started by stopping people outside of the post office. You know, they have
So they have software that will help you track what you're shipping, and then they actually do the shipping.
Yes.
And so to do that, why would they be outside a post office?
To get customers. These people are looking to ship something, so it's a perfect way to, you know, recruit.
They really met entrepreneurs at one of the biggest pain points, right? So say you're an entrepreneur and you ship a product and you're doing everything you can to kind of scale this business. One part of your day is going to the post office, standing in line
around, yeah,
and putting this thing in the mail. They found entrepreneurs right at the door, stopped them from going in, said, hey, we have the software and the logistics tech to help ship this for you. They actually got kicked out of a couple post offices by some of the security guards there. So a very hustly startup story.
And they're doing really well, right? They're pretty big now.
Yeah, they're up to 300 employees now. They've grown to 5 warehouses across the U.S. So they were doing their initial warehousing out of the co-founder's apartment back in Chicago in 2014. 4 years later, they span the entire country and are doing revenue 300% a year.
And I would use them instead of UPS.
So basically what you're doing is they're able to offer entrepreneurs Amazon-like shipping. So they can do two-day shipping. Instead of you having to handle, you know, the UPS system to get standing in line doing all of that, they're taking care of that for you.
We're going
to
talk to Exodus World Services later, a group that helps immigrants. I love these two guys. They're young. How old are they?
30 years old.
Okay, and they're immigrants from India.
That's right.
Great quote you have at the end of the story. We're realizing the American dream ourselves, and we're helping these entrepreneurs realize their American dreams as well, which I love that. I think that's great. There's that. Catherine, you wrote a story about how a nasal spray is going to take away my headache.
Yeah. So Surette Therapeutics, they're a biotech startup with deep roots at the University of Chicago, and they just raised their first round of funding, about $750,000. And so what they do is they make a nasal spray that treats and prevents migraines.
Does it work?
Well, it's been working in rat studies, so they're going to use this new funding to test it on humans.
That could have a remarkable impact, right, if it works.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, kind of how the technology works is the spray reduces the causes of oxidative stress, which cause, you know, neurons in the brain to overactivate and thus give you a really bad headache.
So, and the idea is they're not treating the symptoms here, they're treating what is the cause of it.
Right.
And this is a UC venture?
Exactly. And this is just the latest, backing from UChicago's Polsky Innovation Fund, a relatively new investment fund from the university that's backing some of the startups. They've backed Tovala and a few other companies as well.
That's Jim Dahlke, Catherine Davis in the studio from Chicago Inno. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to do the next segment, Standing Up, or Leaning Backward, or something like that.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis are in the studio from Chicago Inno. Okay, tell me about this chair, this lean right, because everyone says you're supposed to stand up at the workplace. There are standing desks, but more often than not, they are unused, right? And so here comes lean right.
Yeah. So Chicago startup Ergo Impact, they've made it's a standing desk chair that you can kind of sit on and lean on. And it's supposed to make, you want to stand at your desk for longer because a lot of times people aren't using them. I mean, right. It's tiring and you want to sit down. But this is a way to keep you active and keep you standing.
So a way to explain it maybe is because the way the idea came to the inventor was he was fishing. I'm picturing a bass boat or something. And those boats have like little lean-tos in the middle of the boat, right?
Exactly. And that's how you're fishing off the side of that boat, right? So you're kind of standing and leaning on this post. And he basically thought that, he saw a lot of his employees at his previous business kind of come into the office and build their own little standing desks. And he realized, I would do that if I could take a little bit of the pressure off my feet, right? And so he kind of came up with this idea, and it's this adjustable height, basically hybrid seat and stool. Basically, it can go down from if you're sitting at your desk to up, and if you want to kind of lean on it. And the idea is to get people up and standing longer.
And it, like you said, it adjusts, so you can sit on it as a stool, lean back on it, or reduce it all the way and use it as a chair.
Exactly. I mean, in one of our offices that I was at not long ago, the whole office is outfitted with these sit-stand desks, and everyone was sitting because I think standing all day long is just not realistic.
Right.
But, and it's, and the whole idea too is it's not that standing is really the end-all be-all, it's moving. It's how can you get people moving around, and this being able to lean on this device gets people out of their seat.
It's very cool. I mean, I watch the videos of them. I want one badly. I really want one. But it's like $900.
Yeah, so it's mostly a B2B offering. So you and I probably won't go to this website and order one for ourselves, but our office might order one for all the employees.
Tech Madness, tonight's the NCAA National Championship game, Villanova, and
University of Michigan.
Catherine's wearing a Michigan shirt.
This Michigan shade.
I
love it.
Yeah, a little bit. But you guys have Tech Madness too, which is wrapping up, right? And one of our players is someone we've talked about today.
That's right. Ship Bob is in the Final Four of Tech Madness. So we are down, and we started with 64 fast-growing Chicago startups. We are down to 4, Ship Bob, Crafty, Spring CM, and Logic Gate. And so we are going to announce the final 2 based on reader voting tomorrow morning.
Give me 30 seconds of the setup here. You guys set up the brackets, right? You seeded different local companies.
That's right.
And people voted on
them. And we've gotten over 70,000 votes to this point.
Nice.
So people have really taken to it. Yeah, it's really just kind of a fun, silly competition that we do to kind of highlight the activity happening. in Chicago startup scene.
Crafty. I like Crafty.
Crafty, very cool.
They started by bringing kegs to the office.
They basically Trojan horse their way into doing the entire kitchen service for these major offices. So they work for like Yelp and Uber and Uptake and basically these companies that have hundreds and hundreds of tech employees, all of whom want coffee and cold brew and beer and snacks. They are handling all of that. So they're growing really fast.
All right. So they are against ShipBob. But I like the ShipBob story too. The other two, the other side, are a little more technical.
Yeah, SpringCM really is kind of the biggest player left in the bracket in terms of kind of venture funding. They've raised over $120 million, and they're doing some B2B software stuff. So they're kind of one of the most maybe logical choices for the championship here, but it could go anywhere.
Where do people vote?
Go to ChicagoNO.com. There you can find the Tech Madness link there up at the top of the page.
Hey, Catherine, before we go to, you wrote about Apple and the fact that, you know, we talked a lot about Apple was up at Lane Tech, but they're leaving behind not just their announcement, but this coding effort with Chicago Public Schools, right?
Right. So they're, the new program will actually be at Lane Tech, and it'll be for all CPS high school teachers where they can learn coding basics that, you know, then they will use that that knowledge and teach it to their students in their classroom. And the program will be taught by Northwestern professors.
Didn't you? What was the figure? Was it 60,000? How many jobs are app related in Chicago?
Oh yeah, it's about 64,000.
64,000. That's pretty. And I would imagine that coding is one of those things where teachers who've been in the classroom for a while might not have a real good handle on. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, like I've been in this job for a while. It's much different than for people coming in. So refreshers or introductory courses like this would probably go a long way.
Yeah, getting teachers the basics will help them obviously give their students the basics, right? So it's like getting that knowledge right from the get-go.
Catherine Davis, Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno, and also the Inno Minute, right? Where do people hear that?
525, right on this station.
And subscribe to the newsletter. Tell me about the newsletter.
ChicagoInno.com is where you can find our daily newsletter, The Beat, which is basically this kind of conversation we're having right now, but in an email form 5 days a week.
All right, what are you having for lunch? Anything else I can ask you guys? Is that it, pretty much?
Turkey sandwich.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
You know, we talk a lot on this show about immigrants, the power of immigration, the efforts to thwart immigration, every which way, immigrants, and our topics of conversation. Just earlier this show, we talked about the Ship Boys people are talking about. They were both immigrants from Indiana, the Ship Bob company. And I think I first talked to the folks from Exodus World Service back in, it's been a few years ago, and this was when people were scared to death about Syrian refugees being relocated to the United States. In fact, I think the reason we talked was because the then governor of Indiana, Mike Pence, was moving to keep Syrian refugees out of his state of Indiana. That's when I was introduced to Exodus World Service, and so I thought we'd check in again. Sue Horgan is on a phone line, Director of Outreach and Education for the group. Sue, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
And so I just thought we'd check in. You know, immigration is in the news. The president talking again about DACA and seemed to betray a misunderstanding he has about what DACA is over the weekend. I think a lot of people probably do have misunderstandings when it comes to immigration. But I like the work that you guys do. Tell me a little bit about Exodus World Service, where you're headquartered, and what you do.
Great. So our office is based right here in Park Ridge outside of the city. There's two areas of refugees in the Chicagoland area, and that's really the population we serve specifically as refugees. And these folks have left their countries due to being persecuted, whether it's for political, ethnic, or social beliefs. And so they have no choice but to find a safer place to live. If they don't, likely they won't survive. So we serve those people who arrive here in Chicago. We partner with the resettlement agencies that work with the UN to bring them here. They don't choose, actually, to relocate in a specific country. The UN decides that. So we work with these people to help them acclimate. We provide volunteers to provide friendship and support during this process of learning how to live.
So they go to the UN for refuge, and then the UN decides where in the world, they'll be relocated. Some of them come to Chicago, right?
Right. Yeah, that's true.
And you said there were basically two areas in two spots in the city. I'm not sure I understood what that was about.
Yeah, there's two areas in the city where, Rogers Park in Chicago, and then DuPage County. Both of those areas have resettlement agencies.
I see.
So refugees live near there because they provide all those services of housing and ESL and job training.
How many refugees did you work with last year?
Exodus worked with about 1,800
wow.
refugees last year that came to the city.
What do you do to help them resettle? I don't know if resettle is the word. Settle, I guess, would be it.
Yeah, that is a good way to put it. We actually mobilize volunteers to serve the refugee community. So we train people and we educate people on volunteers so that when they meet them, their relationships can grow. They can help them acclimate into the new geography, into the new language. Most often refugees come here without anything. And so some of the programs we provide allow volunteers to help them to build the apartment. And then other opportunities we have is as they acclimate into the community, we can help them with their English conversation.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. The new neighbor conversation. It reminds me a little bit, of Meals on Wheels. We talked to them a couple of weeks ago, or other groups where people just drop by these refugee homes and just talk to people, right? Give them some company, and then they work on their English that way.
Exactly. You know, the resettlement agencies do a fantastic job at providing all the needed services that these folks are in need of. But what they also need is friendship.
Right.
And people to sit and be in company with them and ease the fear and welcome them. So often they've been rejected in other countries that by the time they get here, they really need support to know that they're welcomed here.
When I talked to you guys, to you guys the first time in 2015, there was kind of an anti-refugee frenzy. It seems to have died down, but I don't know if dying down is the equivalent to giving way. I mean, I'm wondering if things have gotten any easier since then, or maybe even harder.
Right. Factually, I'm not quite sure about that, but I do know that volunteers are always necessary to help ease loneliness and to provide the support. Volunteers can let people know that they're welcomed here, and providing that safety net of just the feeling of welcome in their new area is going to provide them with hope and ease the loneliness that they feel.
I understand that you probably don't want to talk too much about the controversy of it all, but I mean, do you get pushback from others that maybe you shouldn't be helping these people?
You know, truly the people we work with are volunteers who want to be educated on refugee issues, want a clear understanding of what they're hearing in the media, so we can help break down that narrative. And then we introduce volunteers to the refugee community. And once you meet these people and realize they're just humans like we are, and that they're resilient and that they want to be a part of the community and they want to, you know, build their homes and get jobs and pay back their community as well.
You've got a fundraiser coming up, right? Is it this week or I think it's next week?
Yeah, it's Friday the 13th. You can't forget that date.
Give me a little, how do people find out more about that?
Yeah, you could visit our website at www.exodusworldservice.org. Click on register. It's a free dinner. Last year we had over 700 people attend. You'll hear from volunteers, refugees, donors, and staff on what we do, what we've done in 2017, and what our vision is for 2018. It's a great evening of relationship and education and learning from each other and how to engage.
Sue Horgan, the name of the organization, just Google it. You'll find the information. Exodus World Service. Sue, it's great to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You bet. Look at this. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Got a minute? Good, because I've got the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing the news, providing input, and breaking down the stories that matter to the world of business. There is no doubt that Loyola University of Chicago lifted the spirits of a sports city, so now they and nine other schools are seeing a payday for their hard work. after the improbable March Madness run for the men's basketball team, Loyola guaranteed $8.5 million for the teams of the Missouri Valley Conference over the span of 10 years, which breaks down to about $140,000 per school per year. It's just another example of an overlooked organization doing things right and it paying off in big ways. Who knows what big stage is next for Loyola? The next big stage for the Chicago Stock Exchange, though, could be New York. The proposed $70 million buyout from the New York Stock Exchange comes after a Chinese company wanted to take over the Chicago platform before the deal fell through last year. There's a good chance that this deal, though, could move forward. But one thing is for sure, this sort of interest could have a fairy tale ending for the Midwest. Tune in tomorrow for all of your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Right, Randy Schaefer is a digital editor at the Chicago Tribune. She joins us on most Mondays to talk about what's going on in social media. Randy, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Hey, Steve.
I would think that, you know, social media and April Fool's Day are a match made in heaven.
Oh, God.
But, you know, maybe it's because of Easter. Maybe I wasn't as engaged. I don't know. I feel like this April Fool's sort of sneaked by us. Now, we got a press release last week from White Castle that they were coming out with a protein powder.
Yeah.
You know, with that tasted like little White Castles, which, you know, was pretty funny. I picked up on that one, but I didn't see a lot of other jokes around.
I didn't see too many either. I had the same, you know, three friends that every year happen to become, air quotes here, pregnant, you on April Fool's Day. But yeah, I didn't see anything too drastic.
But there was this fight between Snapchat and Facebook, right? That sounds pretty funny.
Yeah. So Snapchat and Facebook, you know, Instagram's pretty notorious. Instagram owned by Facebook, pretty notorious for ripping off Snapchat's ideas. So Snapchat
like
kind of
stories and
yeah,
things like
right? stories and things like that. So Snapchat kind of took a little bit of a low blow for April Fool's Day, and they put up a filter. So basically, when you open up the Snapchat app, it opens up to the camera screen, and basically you can make it look like whatever you were taking a photo of was a Facebook post that had been liked by Russian bots.
That's pretty funny.
I think it's hilarious.
You know what? And that's fair play, isn't it?
I think so. They weren't really directly, you know, calling anyone out, but at the same time, they were calling Facebook
and
out.
So if you were to pick, you know, the guys from the people from Chicago, I know were just in here and they do this tech madness, this fake bracket of different mm-hmm. companies. If you were to put up brackets or matches of social media companies, it would be Instagram versus Snapchat, right? They're the two that are most similar to each other.
I think so. Yeah, they're kind of becoming more and more similar to each other.
And
yeah.
Snapchat is younger than Instagram?
Snapchat's younger than Instagram. It hasn't been doing quite as well lately since a lot of the changes that Instagram has made have kind of taken away a few of their users. I know
you mean
I
since
am,
they took their ideas?
Yeah, I know I am personally less likely to go on Snapchat these days. I actually deleted the app from my phone 3 weeks ago and none of my friends have noticed.
Right.
Yeah.
wasn't Snapchat was the one where they were offered a gazillion dollars to sell and they didn't do it?
Yeah, that one was it.
And upset about that now?
I mean, I don't know. You know, if it's someone's passion project, I can see kind of holding on to that. You know, yeah. sometimes it's not about money.
Yeah, okay, but the rest of the time it is.
Yeah.
So you're talking about the Snapchat and Facebook and all that. There also was a piece in the New York Times about boycotting Facebook, right?
Yeah.
And this was the big thing, you know, because of the bots and all of that. People are going to delete Facebook, the privacy losses.
Right, after everything that came out with Cambridge Analytica.
All the lawsuits and things like that. No one's going to delete their Facebook.
No one's going to delete their Facebook. And this kind of thing happens a lot where people be like, oh, you know, like hashtag delete Google or hashtag delete Apple, and it's tweeted sent from an iPhone. And it's,
right, exactly.
This kind of stuff, it's so pervasive in our lives that it's, you know, unless you're going to throw everything in a river and like go live out in the woods, it's kind of hard to imagine boycotting all of these tech companies.
Some of the people urging a boycott of Facebook said, follow me on Instagram.
Exactly.
Which again, same, owned, by owned by the same company. I suppose there's some Uber boycott that was a little more effective, wasn't it?
Yeah, I know that I have seen actually a few of my friends have boycotted Uber and they've actually stuck with it. And Lyft has, you know, there are other alternatives to Uber where it's, you know, you've got Lyft
much
via
the
CTA, exactly right. Like Uber.
The CTA, you know, but talking about how intertwined these things are in our lives right now, I can't imagine Facebook ever going away. Now, that
right.
might be a terribly naive, stupid thing to say. Of course, they could. But I can't imagine it.
Yeah, they're just so ingrained in culture and life and in everything. I can't imagine them ever disappearing.
I mean, really, almost in everything, whether it comes to advertising a business. I use Facebook for Steve Bertrand Travel to keep up with friends, to find people. It just has become like our sixth finger.
Exactly.
So I'm not going to boycott them. I don't care, Randy. I don't care how mad you get
at them.
I
won't get mad at all. I won't make you.
Tell me about parents now. And this one it really got me thinking. I'm not sure how I feel. You know, when my wife was pregnant with our kids, there was the what to expect when you're expecting.
Right. Back,
and it goes month by month. People now are going online to find that stuff, which makes sense. I mean, you know, it's only logical people are going online to find everything. But I'm not sure that I would trust other soon-to-be moms or soon-to-be dads to answer my questions.
So, and I thought this was interesting because it kind of speaks to the differences between your generation and mine. This Forbes piece you're talking about mentioned that 71% of millennials, they value advice from parenting blogs and social media sites and stuff like that. And I see a lot of my friends crowdsourcing, like, what's wrong with my kid? Does anyone have this problem? And sometimes you're like, oh, you know, like, this is what helps me put my kid to sleep. Sometimes you're like, see a doctor. Your generation was probably different.
But, you know, maybe it's the same thing. It's just a different crowd because for millennia, moms have had help raising their kids with other moms.
Yeah.
It takes a village. And so you might have asked your aunt or your sister or your
friends at your Tupperware party.
Friends at your Tupperware party. Thank you. But I'm not quite that old. but I guess this is just a replacement for that. The difference is when you're asking your aunt or your Tupperware friends, you know them a little bit.
Right.
And maybe that's where I'm not quite sure I would make this jump.
Well, I can see it a little more asking your Facebook friends if you haven't boycotted Facebook. But yeah, I'm kind of with you where I think that trusting, you know, oh, this blog looks pretty. I'm going to believe this person and everything they say about parenting. And, you know, you should still probably question where you get your information from and always see a doctor if it's that important.
Yeah, I will. I'll get my recipes from you people, but I will not take my baby tips.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair standard.
Randy Schaefer is a digital editor at the Chicago Tribune. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you for having me.